Hi, and welcome back to the Coffee, Cake, and Kegels podcast. I'm your host, Stacey, and today my guest is Lynn Delmestro-Thompson. She's a certified hypnotist and energy healer. She uses the energy healing system of body talk and body intuitive. She is also a speaker and author of the Amazon bestseller, You Are Not Your Diagnosis. Lynn holds a master's degree in somatic psychology. And Lynn has an interesting story. After being misdiagnosed with leukemia at the age of 25, Lynn became passionate about supporting women in achieving deep levels of health, healing, and vibrancy. So thank you so much to Lynn for being my guest today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Yay! So of course, I want everyone to know your story. What brought you to this realm of healing others?
Yeah, so my story kind of started when I was in my mid-20s. I was in graduate school in California, and I was pursuing a PhD in history. And I'd been in that program for about 3 years. Looking back on it, I know I was really miserable in that program, but I kept telling myself that, you know, hey, graduate school's supposed to be hard. Like, you know, you're not supposed to be happy. Like, all of these, I look back at these now that I do believe system work. I look back at these that I'm like, okay, what a bunch of BS that I was telling myself. And so I'm about 3 years into this program, miserable. Kind of my body was already starting to talk to me at that point. And, you know, I was having a lot of anxiety, and I started getting some panic attacks, the migraine headaches that I'd gotten under control when I was in college, came back really strongly. Mm. And again, I still was just kind of like, oh, this is just normal. You're just stressed out. Like, this is how it's supposed to be. So I'm scheduled for elective surgery that summer of 2004, and I go in for, you know, all the pre-op stuff, and I get a call from my surgeon the night before the surgery, and he says, hey, Lynn, like, there's something abnormal in your blood work. And so I'm, of course, panicking to hear this phone call, and he sent me back to the hospital, made sure that it wasn't a lab error, and he called me back, like, an hour or two later and said, no, it's not a lab error. I can't do surgery. And I was pretty much at that point just left hanging. Like, there was no information about what was wrong. It was just like, it's not safe to do surgery. Go see your primary doctor as soon as you can.
Wow. That's so scary. And that's so scary. And to be so young, you know.
Right. You know, I was 25 at this point, you know, and just, again, it was elective surgery. Like, nothing was wrong. I was just going to have a breast reduction. And, you know, to go from thinking, okay, here I'm going to have this surgery that I had wanted since probably I was 16 to, you know, hey, it's not safe to do surgery was quite a jump.
Of course.
So, you know, I get in to see the primary doctor probably in the next day or two. I don't remember exactly how quickly. And he runs more tests, and then the next thing that happens, I get a phone call from a doctor that I've never met before, and he says, you know, hey, how are you doing? My name is Dr. So-and-so, and I'm like, I'm freaking out because, you know, I mean, I don't know any person I've ever met that has had a doctor that they've never met, never seen, call them on the phone. Like, this, you know, even at 25, I'm like, this is not normal.
Yeah, no, it's not normal.
Exactly. Like, you know, I describe this story of what happened to me sometimes, like, you could be watching a Lifetime movie, because that's literally, you know, what it kind of felt like, was just not really real, like something you're watching on TV. And so he said, well, you know, do you have any symptoms of anything right now? And I'm like, no, but, you know, like, looking back, I didn't know what to even ask. Like, what are you talking about? What should I be worried about? And he said, okay, well, if you don't have any symptoms, just come meet me at the hospital tomorrow morning. But if anything happens tonight, come to the hospital immediately. And I'm like, okay. You know, I think I was looking back, I was so shocked by this phone call that I didn't, you know, my logical brain was not on board. And I didn't go, well, excuse me, like, what type of symptoms should I be concerned about, you know?
Right.
So I just was like, okay, you know, I guess I'll see you at the hospital tomorrow.
Of course, because we do what we're told. We, you know, back then, like, we did what doctors told us to do.
Exactly. So, you know, I spend an anxious night, like, kind of scanning my body constantly, like, is that a symptom? Is this a symptom? I don't know. My pinky just twitched. You know, is that, like, something I should think about, you know? And nothing significant happened that night, so I go to the hospital. He meets me there, and he says, well, we think that you've clotted off the veins that drain your liver. And, of course, that doesn't sound good to anybody. Clotting something off equals bad. And he said, we have to figure out why, and then also how to get your veins open back up. So they do, as they do, tests and more tests. And they said, yeah, we're pretty sure that's what's happened, but because of the attempt to do a bone marrow biopsy, which was just too painful for me to tolerate with just like a little local injection, that was all they gave me.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't get a sample. So at that point, it was just like, okay, we know we're going to have to do this again and get a sample, but we're going to send you to a different hospital in a different city because they said, we've never done this process to open up the portal veins of the liver here in this hospital. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really want to be the first person, your guinea pig, your practice. So, you know,
definitely not.
Thank you for sending me somewhere where they've done this before. And they sent me to a different hospital and they do more tests. They finally do the bone marrow biopsy. And so this is about probably 10 days into all of this hospital experience. And the doctor comes in and I was told that day that, you know, he's probably going to have some sort of information or news for us. So both my parents are sitting in the hospital room. And he said, well, we think it's chronic myelogenous leukemia. And as you can imagine, my body still reacts whenever I think about that moment. It felt like all the oxygen was sucked out of the room. And I was just completely terrified by the word leukemia.
Right, because it's cancer. And when we hear cancer, we think death sentence.
Exactly. So my mind had probably about, 50 different thoughts in the space of about 20 seconds, you know.
I can't even imagine.
am I going to need chemo? Do I need a bone marrow transplant? Like, what does all of this mean? You know, and then I started thinking about long term, and I thought about, I don't really want to do chemo. Like, maybe I would just rather kill myself than go through that. Like, wow. All of these things flashing through my brain. And he said, well, the good news is you don't have to do chemo. So that was kind of like, okay, I can take a small little inhale of relief. He said, we're going to put you on this medication that's meant to target what causes this particular type of leukemia. We're going to send you home. You're going to just, go back to kind of trying to live your life, and we'll be monitoring you. And your doctor down in Santa Barbara will be monitoring you as well. And that was just like the nuclear bomb, getting dropped. And then he's like, okay, bye. And nothing, nothing to acknowledge what just happened, which I think so many people listening, if you've been through the medical system, you know what that's like. It's just, you're given like scary, life-changing news. And then it's like, okay, good luck.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So I went back home and, I start taking the medication. I start just, trying to find some normalcy in my life. And over the course of the next kind of year or so, my body starts to actually decline. So I'm going to the hematologist and he's saying, well, we really think that the medication is working. The labs that we're doing show that it's targeting what it's supposed to target. And yet at the same time, I started to lose like a crazy amount of weight. So I went from probably, being like, could have lost 10 pounds and that would have been good for me, to being kind of a human skeleton that people would say like, hey, like, are you on some sort of like crazy diet or like, what's going on with you? And I was like, no, not a crazy diet. Was, going through treatment for leukemia.
Yeah, that's terrible. I mean, and no one, did anyone even try to help you or seeing how emaciated you were getting, did anyone stop and say, I'm talking in the medical field, you know, let's talk about nutrition or let's get you on some protein shakes or anything like that?
No. So in fact, you know, like when I would actually go see the doctor and he would say, you know, good news, medication's working. And then he would say, well, you know, how do you feel like you're doing? How are you feeling? And I wasn't one to sugarcoat it. Like I told the truth of how I felt. And I was like, well, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, losing my strength. I feel like I'm declining, you know, I'm worried about how I'm doing. And he had the audacity to say to me, you look great. At this time when I would look in the mirror and I was like, I knew I did not look great. I knew I looked very, very thin, like, you know, sunken eyes, like dark circles under my eyes. It's like, how the hell do you have the audacity to say to me, you look great? And when I would bring up, you know, the medication I was on had kind of some of the same side effects as if you went through chemo, because it kind of was almost like chemo in a pill. So it would make me nauseous a lot of times. And I think part of the reason I was losing that weight at the time was, you know, I would take it and no matter how I would try to time it around dinner, like before, after, you know, so many hours, this, that, most of the time I would get so nauseous that I couldn't keep my dinner down. So again, like you're saying, you know, nobody's talking about nutrition. Like all they were just like, the suggestions when I would say is this medication is, you know, making me nauseous. I'm like throwing up all the time. And they're like, oh, just try taking it at a slightly different time.
Yeah, no.
It's like, well, maybe, you know, have you ever thought of like recommending something like ginger to somebody?
Right. Or even, I mean, even, you know, medically Zofran, you know, back then or whatever to stop the nausea, something. I mean,
especially when it's like every day, you know, and how can you get proper nutrition when, you know, one of your main meals every day, you know, you're not keeping it down.
Right, of course.
So it was, you know, quite this crazy struggle, and I felt like this doctor really wasn't listening to me at all, you know, when I would say these things. And then I would go back to my primary doctor and I'd say, hey, you know, I really don't like this doctor. I really don't think that he's listening to me. And he would always reassure me because the two of them had gone to medical school together. So he would say, oh, you know, just trust me. Like, he's the best in town. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, this guy is the best in town. That's scary because this is not good care. You know, like I knew enough to know it wasn't really good care, but he wouldn't give me the referral. And as we all know, it's like to see specialists with most insurance, you have to have your primary give you a referral. So I'm like stuck in this, you know, cycle. And I was stuck in it for 3 years, seeing this guy that I just, this doctor I did not really like, didn't really trust. And then finally, I got to the point where I was like, okay, I was stuck because I had student health insurance at the time. And that meant basically nothing once you left being a graduate student. Like, you couldn't get any other type of coverage if you had a diagnosis like leukemia. So I'm like, how do I get out of this? I'm in this web. And finally, I had to work for about 3 years to get myself stable enough. And some of the things that helped me were more alternative things that we can talk about a little later. So I finally got stable enough and I was able to go out and get a job that had insurance. And that was like my main criteria. I was like, health insurance. And if I could work less than 40 hours a week for it, that would be like even better. So I did that, got new insurance, got referred by my new primary doctor to a new specialist. And at that appointment, I've come in with my stack of medical records, probably like 3 inches of paper thick. And he's like flipping through all the pages and he goes, yeah, I don't think this is chronic myelogenous leukemia. And I think I had known in my gut like something was wrong for the 3 years, but, you know, it was the first time somebody was listening to me.
And how validating is that, you know, to finally be like, I'm being heard.
Exactly. You know, so, and I remember that moment too of just feeling, it was, you know, people say, well, what emotion did you feel? And like, it wasn't just one, you know, it was, I was, like, angry because it had been 3 years and, you know, nobody was listening. I was relieved, you know. I was a little bit hopeful that hopefully the new diagnosis would be something less scary, you know. And I was hopeful that, okay, I can go off of this medication that's just awful.
Okay. So, and, okay, yeah, I was going to say, and then what happened? Because I'm, like, sitting here, I'm like, an end?
He confirmed, you know, through tests, you know, because, of course, they can't just look at your records and be like, yeah, you know, you don't have it. Like, we have to do more tests. So they do more tests. And he confirmed wasn't leukemia at all, was a different type of blood disorder. And so they changed, you know, what I was being treated with, and a medication had, like, none of that horrible nausea side effect. Getting on that medication started to actually make me feel better versus worse. So
yep.
I just started to improve.
Good. Yeah, because it was treating the right, you know, disease. It wasn't, you know, you were being treated for the wrong thing.
Right. And, you know, when I came to find out in kind of investigating all of this, and, you know, how did this happen? Because I've had people say that, like, how did that happen? I think what they based the diagnosis off initially was one lab test. And that lab test was probably either a false positive or someone else's lab sample. And everything else pointed in a different direction. But they based it on this one particular thing. And then when they're monitoring after, they're looking for something that was never there in the first place. So, of course, if you're looking for something that was never there in the first place, it looks like the medication worked, right?
Of course.
It's like, oh, the medication fixed it. No, it was never there to begin with.
That's so scary, really, to think about not only your story, but how many other people are experiencing this kind of, and I'm going to call it what it is, it's negligence and malpractice, you know. It's
certainly is, you know. And then throw in a hint of medical gaslighting in there too, you know.
Well, that's together. To be, yeah, of course. Of course they throw that in there.
Yep. And it is quite common, you know. I can't remember off the top of my head anymore, but I've looked up statistics around, you know, misdiagnosis and, you know, medical mistakes and stuff like that. And it's quite an alarming number. You know, we all want to think that, you know, they've gone to medical school for years and they know what they're doing and these kinds of things, like, barely ever happen. But it's unfortunately much more common than we think about.
It is. And it's, you know, but I feel like today's day and age, people are starting to really wake up to that.
Yes.
You know, the allopathic model is, I like to say this term, it's crumbling.
Yes.
So, yes. You know.
You know, I think it, not to be completely anti, you know, allopathic Western medicine, I think it has its place in certain, you know, cases. Like,
yep.
I always say to people, like, hey, if you're having a heart attack, like, don't call me, like, go to the hospital.
Right, right. Or you break a bone. You know, you need right. An orthopedist. Of course, we need both Western and Eastern. But
right.
A lot of the Western model has been geared towards selling pills.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think you and I both have a very similar thought process on that. That everything is not necessarily, you know, in need of drugs. You know, I've seen quotes too out there that are brilliant that say, you know, nobody has a drug deficiency. Like, we just are not made as human bodies. Like, sometimes, yes, they can save lives. I'm not, like, saying, I mean, I take certain medications. I don't have a thyroid anymore. Without thyroid medication, you know, I would not be able to function.
Absolutely, yep.
But it's not the be-all, end-all, you know, take it for every little thing in your life and just keep adding pills to the regimen kind of situation.
Yep. So now, tell me how you went from that, so you were in this realm now of just starting to heal. What else did you do to further that process?
Yeah, so, you know, when I was first kind of dealing with all of this about a year in, I started to actually, you know, explore alternative things. So the first thing that I did was I went for biofeedback therapy. And basically, if people don't know what that is, you just get hooked up to different sensors. And those sensors get fed into a computer screen in real time. So you can look at, like, oh, what's your heart rate doing, like, in this very moment? What is your, you know, how are you breathing? And so for me, I went to that because I was so flippin' anxious all the time.
Rightfully so.
When you're told you have leukemia, you have a doctor who doesn't listen, like, you don't know what the heck you're doing with your life, like, anxiety, it was probably, you know, at a 12 out of 10. And I kind of had this realization of, like, I don't have any tools. So I need to start to find my own tools, because all I had been offered at one point was, oh, hey, you know what? You can go to a cancer support group. And I was like, no way. That does not sound good to me. Like, I knew that I was highly sensitive. I don't know if at that moment I knew the word empath. But I certainly knew, like, sitting in a room of people going through chemotherapy was not going to help me. I knew it was just going to, like, sink me further. And yeah. So being offered only that, right? So, you know, I had to find my own tools. And then about 18 months after my diagnosis, I kind of went through this kind of second crisis, second trauma in my life, which was my best friend dying very, very suddenly. And she actually died of a blood clot, which was, you know, like, drove home how, you know, now 26-year-olds can die of things like a blood clot. So
right.
I got so depressed that at first I, you know, fought getting any help for about 2 months. I kind of just basically, I was suicidal in the sense of, like, just wanting to give up and, like, fade away from the world. I wouldn't have, like, taken a bunch of pills. I wouldn't have slit my wrists. Like, I wouldn't have done any of that. I just was like, maybe if I stop eating and taking my medications regularly, maybe I'll just die, you know, not be here anymore.
Oh, man.
And after about 2 months of that, my parents, you know, begged and cajoled me to get help. And I finally agreed. And so in therapy, that was kind of when I also had this epiphany moment. And it was a moment of, like, oh, you know what? I don't really want to die. I just have no idea how to, like, deal with any of this. Like, you know, like I said, nobody gave me anything that was going to help me through this. It was just like, here's a diagnosis. Oh, you can go to a support group. Good luck.
Yeah. And then not to mention losing your friend. That's terrible.
Right. And then, you know, being in grad school, I remember just having my professors were completely insensitive to the loss. Like, after a few months, it was just like, well, you know, why aren't you back to, like, doing your work? Of, like, because I'm grieving. Like, grief is not, especially when it's a loss like that, it's very kind of traumatic and sudden. But any type of grief, really, is you just don't get over it in a month. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm back to normal now.
Right, of course.
You know, but they just kept kind of being so insensitive. And I was just struggling. And so in that realization, it was like, okay, I have to find the things that help me. So, you know, I started seeing a therapist outside of this program that I had been in for a few days to kind of stabilize me. And then she said, go to this class, and it's called Yoga for Healing. And I was like, what? Yoga? Like, you think I'm going to go to a yoga class? My experience before, like, I grew up in Idaho. The only yoga I had ever seen was yoga in a gym. So, you know, people, like, bending into pretzels, standing on their heads, like, you know, a workout kind of a yoga. And I'm like, what the heck is she sending me to a yoga class?
Right.
She's like, no, Lynn, this is not what you're picturing. Please just go try it. Like, trust me. So I was like, oh, all right. Okay, I'll go trust you and try it. And I did. And it wasn't what I pictured. You know, it was a lot of, like, lying on the floor with, like, bolsters and blankets and, you know, like, breathing and tiny movements and meditating and, you know, like, being in my body in a more positive way, I would say, was kind of what I got.
So it sounds like more of, like, a restorative.
It was kind of restorative therapeutic, yeah.
Okay.
The that was kind of, she called it therapeutic yoga, and that was actually what she taught, like as a trainer for people as well to learn how to do that. So those two things kind of started me, and then I like to think I kind of became the yes woman of like trying anything that crossed my path. And I maybe you can relate to that, where, you know, somebody's like, have you ever tried acupuncture? I'm like, no, but you know a good acupuncturist.
Yep, I totally relate. Anything anyone tells me now, even now, I'm like, oh, colostrum? I'm going to try that.
Yeah, or at least, you know, you're going to read about it.
Yep.
And know, just like something I want to try. So I got so kind of curious about that. And like somebody offered me a Reiki session. I'm like, I don't know what Reiki is. I don't know what energy healing is, but okay. You know, like I'll try it. And I remember that, like I got up off of, I think he actually worked on me on the floor. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I looked so different. Like there was just so much vibrancy in my face. I was like, whoa, what the heck? You know, I felt just really good. And I was like, all of these things, these work a heck of a lot better than this medication that's just, you know, making me throw up all the time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it was kind of through that process. And then kind of when I left the graduate school program and I started working, I worked in a bank for a number of months. And then I started to kind of have this realization of like, I really am passionate about all of these things that I'm learning. And, you know, maybe not now, like maybe, you know, in a few months or a year from now, or like whenever I feel more resourced and healthy, like I want to learn how to do these things because I think other people could use these things.
Yes. And it's interesting because I feel, especially now, it's so common. It's becoming more and more common for people to be trying these, you know, holistic methods. You know, they're really diving into energy work and, you know, somatic body work, all these, you know, all these different things. People are like, oh, I do this, I do that. There's so many different modalities out now. And it's really amazing.
Right. It really is. I mean, if you think about it, it is an amazing time to be alive in that sense, because there are so many different things that you can try, you know?
Yeah.
There's probably a laundry list of different modalities, and, you know, so many of them have benefits, and, you know, some have benefits for some people, and sometimes, it, you know, what works for one doesn't always work for others.
Yeah, you have to find what works. I think, you know, you have to find what works best for your energetic body, you know?
Exactly. And I'm sure you probably tell people the same thing that I tend to, like, just because one thing doesn't work, like, don't give up, because there's, you know, probably hundreds of other things that could work.
Yeah. And there's so many different modalities to try, you know.
Exactly.
You just never know. And so go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and I think sometimes what we're drawn to, you know, you hear somebody describe something and you're like, well, that sounds kind of cool. Like that can sometimes be a clue of maybe I should try that, you know, and then sometimes you hear somebody describe something and you go, yeah, that just doesn't, I don't really feel excited about that.
Right. Or it's not resonating. Yeah, definitely. So now what brought you to Body Talk and Body Intuitive?
Yeah, so, you know, I started out my practice and I was trained in biofeedback and therapeutic yoga because those were two of the biggest things that helped me. And then I also was attuned in Reiki. And then probably about a couple of years after I started my business, I woke up one day and I had this pain in my left knee. And I was like, this is kind of weird. Like, I scanned through, you know, the day or two before and I'm like, okay, I didn't do anything that injured it. Like, there was just nothing that I could think of physically that had hurt my knee. I just woke up one morning and I'm like, ouch. So, you know, I never went to the doctor at that point because I was just like, okay, all they're going to do is say, here, take some Tylenol or these pain medicines if it's too bad or whatever. And I was like, you know, I could take pain medicines if I need to, but I don't really want to. So I started doing all these holistic things that I already knew. So I was getting acupuncture and I had the chiropractor check it out. And, you know, I was trained in therapeutic yoga, so I'm like doing that on myself. And it would get a little bit better, and then it would just go right back to kind of point, you know, the starting point again. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, it just wouldn't budge. And this actually went on for about 3 months. And it just kind of actually started getting worse, because it got to the point where I'm like, okay, now it's hard for me to sit at my desk and like do anything on the computer. It's hard for me to stand for long periods of time. Like, most positions after a period of time, I was in pain. Mm-hmm. And I would describe to people, I was like, you know, it feels like my knee is talking to me. Like, it feels like there's a voice there, but, you know, like, I might as well be talking Japanese because I've got no clue. Like,
what is it saying? What is it saying?
Exactly. I'm like, could you speak a language that I speak? And one moment, just this memory popped into my head that I had been at a business networking event the year before, and I met this woman, and she said, oh, I do this thing called Body Talk, and she told me kind of a little bit about what it was, and I was like, well, that sounds really cool. But I was like, well, you know, I have, like, my laundry list of things I already do. So at that point, I wasn't really drawn to trying it. I was just like, kind of have enough self-care here. And when I remembered her, and then I remembered, you know, Body Talk and her description, I'm like, well, maybe she can translate for my knee. Like, I'm willing to try anything at this point, because, you know, 3 months of pain is not fun.
Right.
So I go in, I make an appointment, go in for a session, and she says to me, did anything traumatic happen to you right before this pain came on? And it was like the light bulb went on, because I had no connection to this memory before she brought it to my attention. I was like, oh, yeah. My parents had been staying with me, and my dad was going through basically a mental health crisis at that point. So they had come from Idaho to stay with me in Oregon, and we were trying to look for, like, second opinions, somebody that could help him get stable. And the couple weeks they were there didn't go really very well. Like, we didn't really get answers. So it was a stressful time. And then they left, and I had taken 2 weeks off of work, you know, as a self-employed person to help them. And immediately I just jumped back into, okay, now I have to, like, you know, start doing all of the seeing clients and marketing myself. And my body was like, hey, girl, you didn't even take a hot second there to, like, acknowledge the 2 weeks that you just went through. Like, you just jumped from one thing into the next. And as soon as we brought that up and she had a technique that we used to help, like, release the trauma and the emotion from that memory, I got up off her table and the pain was completely gone.
Wow. How amazing is that, right?
It was, like, so amazing. And I was, like, kind of hesitant after. I'm like, is it going to come back? And it didn't. It didn't, but I went back to see her because I was so fascinated.
Yeah, I'd be like, when can I see you again?
Exactly. I'm like, what kind of magic is this? I need to know more.
That's awesome.
And that kind of found me, and after a few sessions, you know, working on some other things with her, I was like, okay, how do I learn how to do this?
That's awesome. So in your work, I mean, I know just from, you know, listening to your meditation and your, you know, your hypnosis, how do you incorporate all of this to help your clients?
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of blend both working with, you know, the energy tools that I have with hypnosis, not typically in the same session, but sometimes. So I use kind of more the body talk, body intuitive model to help people understand, like, what the story is behind their symptom, and kind of like the story of my knee, like, why is this happening? What we're unpacking, why did this get triggered in your body? What does your body need in order to shift it and heal? So that's kind of one of the key pieces. And then I use hypnosis a lot for working with the subconscious mind and working with our beliefs about health and healing and what's possible. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that because I only certified in hypnosis about a year ago, because I started noticing people would say, like, clients would say, well, you know, then repeatedly, like, do you think this is going to work? like, do you think this energy work and the body talk is going to help me? And I was like, yeah, of course I do. But do you?
Right.
And someone asked that repeatedly, it starts to point to, like, they have a belief, or, you know, they have something that's blocking them from fully saying, yeah, I 100% know that this is going to help me.
Yep, because people don't believe that they really can heal.
Right. And, you know, it can even be sneaky and subconscious, like what I found in my own self just this year. I was at an event and I was listening to one of my favorite people, Bruce Lipton.
Oh, yep.
And he answered a question of someone in the audience who was like, you know, I really believe that I can heal. You know, I do all of the things. And yet, you know, healing hasn't completely happened for me. And he's like, why? And Bruce said, well, you have to look at the first 7 years. You have to look at how you were programmed in the first 7 years about, you know, health, doctors, what's possible in terms of healing. And that for me was like a flashing neon sign for me, because I was like, oh, consciously, I 100% believe, you know, anything is possible. Our bodies are amazing. I see things happen all the time that blow my mind. But I had never looked at those 7 years.
Right.
I had never explored, you know, how I had been conditioned to view health and healing. So without kind of pulling up those weeds, I guess we could call them, from our mind, you know, we can walk around saying, yeah, I totally believe I'm going to heal. This is possible. And then there's something in your subconscious going, it's the doctors, and you take the pills, and they make you better, because that's what mommy told you, or, you know, what you learned when you were a little kid.
Yeah, you're right. It, when it comes down to it, it's programming.
Exactly, and I actually made myself a hypnosis for this. Like, I wrote it when I was at this event. Like, I kind of got the inspiration to do it. And I recorded it for myself, and I listened to it. In fact, I was actually listening to it this morning. It's fascinating, because I'm not a person that has a lot of, like, early childhood memories. I'm not like, oh, I remember that thing that happened when I was 3. But I could remember, in taking myself through this process, like, basically being a baby and being in the doctor's office and getting my first shots.
Wow.
And the trauma of that, and, like, even just, like, the sense of the smell, you know, like, the sterility of the room, like, whatever they use to clean it, and, you know, the cold of the scale that they stick you on when you're a baby,
yes.
You know, like, all of these things. And I was like, wow, it's pretty interesting to kind of go back and revisit that and clear it up, because I certainly don't want to hold on to those old. A, I think there's some trauma in there, and B, there's also some programming of, like, oh, you know, this is what we do, this is what makes us healthy.
Right, like, even when I think back to the idea of well visits, what's mm-hmm. the point? What is the point of those? They're well. Why do they have to come for a visit and be traumatized?
Right, poked and prodded.
Right, you know, like, when, like, I now knowing what I know, you know, obviously, but I didn't know back then, and
right.
You know, it's just the trauma that we create in our bodies. You know, it's just for what,
right.
You know, for what. So, yeah,
it's like, now if you're actively, like, second something's going on, okay, maybe it might be helpful to try to figure out why. But yeah, well, this visits, like. Why?
Exactly.
There's no problem.
Yeah, it's just really like a crazy program. That's what it is. It's a program. So
exactly. And then we get conditioned. It's like, okay, constantly, you know, every year you go and you do this. You know, some screening is probably useful, but there's probably a lot of it out there too that not so great.
Yeah.
You know, like mammograms for women and the radiation that we get from constantly doing that to our breasts.
Yep, that definitely. That's another one. So now tell the listeners a little bit about your Facebook group and what you're working on, because I'm excited for you.
Oh, yes. I have a Facebook group, and it's called Sisters on the Journey to More Vibrant Health. And so I teach a lot of kind of free content within that group. So I usually at least twice a month have a short 30-minute class. on just different topics, and I'm always open to like people having a topic they want to hear about and learn about if it's in my wheelhouse. Don't ask me about, you know, nutrition exactly. I'm not a nutritionist, but you know, there's things I can teach on that are somewhat related to that.
Yeah.
And then in January, I'm actually starting a group program, which I've wanted to run kind of a group offering for a while. And this one is going to be all about kind of changing our habits. So it's kind of an anti-resolution, anti-New Year's resolution approach to change.
I love that.
Because so many people, I mean, you know, I'm sure most of the people listening is like, oh yeah, I've tried in the past, I've made a New Year's resolution, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, where are you at?
Right. Yep. I don't believe in resolutions, so.
Then it's interesting, having kind of done surveys on social media, it seems like a lot more people are moving away from that, but then it leads to the question of like, well, how can we make change that's sustainable and, you know, long lasting and successful. And
right.
So that's one of the things that I'm going to be working with people on within that group program, is reprogramming again the subconscious mind, because it's often our subconscious mind that sabotages us.
Yeah. It's that voice that we're always hearing, or, you know, patterns we get stuck in that we fall back into.
Into, and we're like, before we even know it, we're like, hey, why am I doing that again? Like, I said I was gonna stop doing X, and now, you know, it's 2 days later and I'm doing X again.
I know, sometimes it's a vicious cycle, you know, but it's great that you are creating these groups where people are able to learn from you, you know. Yeah. I mean, your story is pretty magnificent. And to have people, you know, yeah, I mean, and then to have people learn from you and your experiences and everything, it's really a blessing.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, the group has been, group ideas have been brewing for a while, but nothing has kind of ever come fully to fruition. But I feel like next year, between that and then, I actually have kind of another idea of what's coming after that in terms of a group offering, and that's more around creating the conditions in the body for it to self-heal.
Oh, I love that.
Excited about.
Sign me up for that one.
So that one's going to be kind of a blend of hypnosis, a lot of kind of the hypnosis that I do one-on-one, kind of the topics, and then working a lot with the nervous system and working on kind of emotional balance, emotional regulation. I feel like those are three really key areas that kind of, when we check those all off, it kind of creates the way that the body can be like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing. I heal cuts all the time, so I can heal whatever I need to heal.
Absolutely. I have a friend who is also in the healing arts, and she one time said to me, you know, every day our body is creating and killing cancer.
True.
She said, so, yeah, she's like, you just don't know it. She said, so it's all about your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And, yep, and your perceptions and your beliefs. She said, but every day it's happening. She's like, you just don't know it. She's like, so don't discredit your body and the wisdom.
Right. And then those thoughts, you know, as I think Joe Dispenza especially is one of the big ones that's always talking about, that the thoughts trigger the emotions, and then the emotions are kind of what set cascade going on in the body too.
Yeah.
Like if you're constantly in fear, you know, of something happening, oh, you know, going to the idea of like people doing genetic testing, and it's like, oh no, you know, I have the gene for X, you know, I have gene for breast cancer, I better do something about that, you know. And then some women make the choice, obviously, to do something proactively. But as Bruce Lipton is always talking about, it's like, just because that potential is there, just because you have that gene doesn't always have to turn on.
Exactly. Yep. That's what I believe too. I, you know, so he's right in that regard.
Exactly. You know, the more we can just say, hey, like, just because there's a potential for something, you know, just like there could be the potential you walk across the street and get hit by a car. I mean, there's always that chance, right? But are you never going to walk across the street because you could potentially just get hit by a car? No, you look both ways. You do things to take care of yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I try to explain to clients of mine, you know, who say, oh, well, I have a thyroid issue because it's genetic. And I'm thinking, okay, well, no, you know, let's talk about the 20 other things that happened before genetics even stepped into play, you know?
Right.
So.
Toxins,
right. Exactly. Not. Yeah. Yeah. So. So Lynn, where can my listeners find you, especially if they'd like to work with you or if they'd like to join your Facebook group?
Yeah, so the Facebook group, you can look up Sisters on the Journey to More Vibrant Health, or I'm sure you probably can also put a link in the show notes so people can just click and go that way.
Yep.
And my website is heartfirehealingllc.com.
Yeah, I'll link them both up. And is it okay if I link your Instagram as well?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, awesome.
There's some content on there as well, so you can always follow me on Instagram too.
Perfect. Okay, well, thank you so much for being my guest today. And
thank you for having me.
If there's any last thought that you could tell the, you know, the listeners, what would it be?
I think going back to what we just talked about, the power of your mind, like start exploring and examining like what you think on a daily basis and what you really believe, because you'll probably find some things. I catch myself sometimes thinking things that I'm like, oh, do I really want to walk around repeating that over and over in my head? No. So when you catch yourself, you can even just, you know, stop yourself in that moment. Having a thought like, oh, you know, I'm not healthy, or even a sneaky one is, oh, I'm so tired, and you catch yourself, you kind of stop it, and then you say, what do I really want to believe instead? I have plenty of energy, I'm healthy, you know, my body is amazing, whatever it is for you, and use that kind of on repeat.
I love that, and that's the first step in rewiring.
Exactly, and that's the part where, you know, we have access to self-directed neuroplasticity, you know, and then the hypnosis that I use with people is kind of gets to the underlying roots, and the two of those things together, boy, it's like, you know, gasoline on a fire.
Yeah, powerful. Exactly. Awesome. All right, well, thank you so much, and I'm going to link everything up so everyone could find you, and I'm just grateful for you to be here today, so thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you to all my listeners, as always.